Welcome to Torah from JTS, a weekly commentary from the Jewish Theological Seminary.
This is Rabbi Ravi Harris, professor of Bible and ancient Semitic languages at the Jewish Theological Seminary, with a commentary for Parshat Korach. I've entitled it, Did Korach Get a Bum Rap? We have a marvelous love for this government of ours. In fact, it is almost a religion, and it is well that it should be, because we have a splendid form of government, and we have a splendid set of laws. We have everything here that we need, except that we have neglected the fundamentals upon which the American government was principally predicated. How many of you remember the first thing that the Declaration of Independence said? It said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that there are certain inalienable rights for the people, and among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it said further, we hold the view that all men are created equal. That was my rendition of a famous speech entitled Every Man a King, Share Our Wealth, a radio speech by the famous or infamous Senator Huey P. Long of Louisiana on February 23rd, 1934. Given the level of political demagoguery that has permeated, some would say befouled, the political process in America, few today remember the career of Huey Long, until recently considered the most significant demagogue to have ever ascended to the pinnacle of power in the United States. Reading the excerpts from one of his most famous speeches today and evaluating some of his public works program that attempted to redress economic imbalances between the rich and poor in America, one might be surprised that he was both loved and feared. And even to this day, scholars debate the degree to which Long's populism was only a ruse to concentrate ever more power into his own hands, and whether to consider him a fascist leader who was indisputably on the rise until his assassination in 1935. Now, the memory of Huey Long and the continued concern over the role of demagoguery in American politics comes to mind this week because we see a prime example of it in Parshat Korach, the figure of Korach himself. Now, the character of Dathan, played by Edgar G. Robinson in the famous movie The Ten Commandments, was essentially based on the figure of Korach. Now, Korach was long vilified by the rabbinic sages, and of course, the Torah itself condemns him as the paradigmatic rebel against the divinely sanctioned leadership of Moses and Aaron. Our portion quickly addresses the heart of the matter. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehat ben Levi, Vidatan va'aviram b'nei Eliav, V'on ben Peleth b'nei Reuven, Vayakumu lifnei Moshe, Va'anashim mi'b'nei Yisrael 50 and 200, Nisi'ei Eda, Kriyei Moed, Anshei Shem. Vayikahlu al Moshe v'yal Aharon, Vayomeru aleihem, Rav lachem, Kichol ha'eda, Kulam kedoshim, Uvdocham Adonai. Umadua titnasu al kehal Adonai. Now Korach, the son of Itzar, the son of Kohath, son of Levi, betook himself along with Datan and Aviram, sons of Eliab, and On, son of Peleth, descendants of Reuben, to rise up against Moses, together with 250 Israelites, chieftains of the community, chosen in the assembly, men of repute. They combined against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you have gone too far, for all of the community are holy, all of them, and the Lord is in their midst. Why then do you raise yourselves above the Lord's congregation? That's from Numbers chapter 16, verses 1 through 3. Now, a reader of a plain sense of biblical narrative, pshat in Hebrew, might not find anything particularly objectionable in the brief programmatic speech of Korach. After all, only a few verses earlier, the Torah commands all Israelites, in other words, not only the Kohanim, the priests, to attach tzitzit to the corners of their garments in order to demonstrate all Israel's status as holy to the Lord. I'm referencing the book of Numbers, chapter 15, verse 40. And even more significantly, in the narrative run-up to the divine revelation on Mount Sinai, God is exquisitely clear on the subject. V'ata, im shamo tishmu'u b'koli u'shmartem et briti, v'hi'item li sigula mikol ha'amim, ki li kol ha'aretz, v'atem tiyu li mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. Now then, if you will obey me faithfully and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all the peoples. Indeed, all the earth is mine, but you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. That was a citation of the book of Exodus, chapter 19, verses 5 through 6. And seen in light of this biblical context, what Korach proclaims in our parasha does not seem off base, at least not at first blush. Moreover, even some of our most prominent rabbinic exegetes, our parshanim, assess Korach's statement soberly, even as they were aware of his ultimate downfall. For example, in his commentary on Numbers chapter 16, verse 3, Rashi unpacks Korach's words in a not unsympathetic vein. Madua titnasu, why do you, Moses and Aaron, raise yourselves above the Lord's congregation? But then, channeling the words of Midrash Tanchuma, Rashi changes the Bible's plural address into a speech of Korach directly to Moses. Im lakachta ata malchut, lo haya lecha livror la'achicha kihuna. Lo atem levadchem shmatem besinai anochi Adonai Elohecha. If you have taken royal rank for yourself, Korach says to Moses in Rashi's language, you should at least not have chosen the priesthood for your brother. It is not you two alone who heard at Sinai, I am the Lord your God. All the congregation heard it. Now, to his credit, Rashi understands that there is nothing objectionable per se in Korach's words. Another of our greatest medieval masters, Rabbi Abraham Ibn Ezra, similarly analyzes the biblical narrative and is ostensibly willing to understand Korach's charge as having some basis in the narrative truth of the Torah. Thus we see, through these observations, it is not on the base of the charge itself that Korach is condemned. Rather, it must be something else. So, why does the Torah consider him as worthy of the death penalty? Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor, a student of one of Rashi's grandsons, offers an explanation that helps us understand Korach's more insidious motives. He writes, Mitoch teshuvato shel Moshe, she'amar lehem uvikashtem gam kihuna, ata lamed she'al hakihuna haya me'arer, ela she'haya medaber kamo bishvil kol ha'eda, kidei she'ya'utu kulam lidvarav, ve'lo yomru shemahu mevakesh la'atzmo. From Moses' response, Bechor Shor writes, in which he said to Korach, now that God has advanced you and all your fellow Levites with you, do you seek the priesthood too? He cites Numbers chapter 16, verse 10. One learns that it was in seeking the high priesthood that Korach sought to subvert the leadership of Moses and Aaron. But Korach would speak as though he was speaking on behalf of the entire congregation, so that all would become accommodated to his words and would not realize that he was simply seeking power for himself. That Korach's seemingly reasonable words were in fact nothing more than a power grab was seen by a character more or less invented whole cloth by the rabbis in a midrash, the wife of the mysterious figure of On ben Pelet. Now, if you'll recall, On is mentioned in the opening of our parasha, and I quote, "Now Korach, son of Izhar, son of Kohath, son of Levi, betook himself, along with Datan and Aviram, sons of Eliab, and On, son of Peleth." However, after this brief appearance, On is never mentioned again. I invite those who are interested for a pithy explanation of contemporary text-critical approach, see the insightful commentary of Jacob Milgram in the JPS Torah Commentary on Numbers. In any case, the Midrash, picking up this oddity of introducing a character in an important episode, but then failing to mention him again in the narrative, imagines the following conversation between On and his clever wife. I'm referencing here a passage in the Babylonian Talmud, the Treatise Sanhedrin, pages 109b to 110a. Rav says, "On, son of Pelech, his wife saved him. She said to him, 'What is the difference to you? If this master, Moses, is the great one, you are the student. And if this master, Korach, is the great one, you are still the student.' On said to her, 'What shall I do? I took counsel and I took an oath with them that I would be with them.' She said to him, 'I know that the entire assembly is holy, as it is said, for all the assembly is holy.' She said to him, 'Sit, for I will save you.' She gave him wine to drink and caused him to become drunk and laid him inside their tent. She sat at the entrance and exposed her hair. Anyone who came and saw her stepped back. In the meantime, Korach and the other rebels were swallowed up. And that's the way that On, son of Pelech, escaped punishment." Not only does this midrash explain the disappearance of a character from the biblical narrative, it creates a character, On's wife, who insightfully discerns what her husband has not seen, namely, that Korach's program is little more than a power grab, however he couches it. If all the Israelites are de facto junior partners in the leadership structure, despite all of them being holy, that will not change under Korach. And when she cites the verse, "The entire assembly is holy as it is written," she understands that not as the opening to determine the divinely sanctioned leadership, but rather as an aspirational observation that is supposed to lead the congregation to holiness in interpersonal relations. That she exploits this knowledge to save her husband is not a detriment, but rather serves to make her a gutsy heroine in another vein altogether. That we live in a world of conflict is a given, both in the Bible and ever since. Wise people learn to discern the difference between leaders who would guide society through conflicts to its better self, and those who would seek to undermine authority under the ruse that they are fighting for the common man, when in reality they seek only to establish themselves in power and enrich themselves while they are doing it. The sages rightfully intuited Korach's true nature in their observation in the Mishnah, sometimes known as Pirkei Avot, chapter 5, verse 17. "Kol machloket shehi l'shem shamayim, sofa lehitkayem, v'she'ena l'shem shamayim, ein sofa lehitkayem. Ezu hi machloket shehi l'shem shamayim, zo machloket hilel v'shimai, v'she'ena l'shem shamayim, Zo machloket Korach vechol adato. Every dispute that is for the sake of heaven will in the end endure, but one that is not for the sake of heaven will not endure. Which is the dispute that is for the sake of heaven? Such was the dispute of Hillel and Shammai. And what is the dispute that is not for the sake of heaven? Such was the dispute of Korach and all his congregation. May we gain and preserve the discernment to steer clear always from demagoguery and to support leaders who did not exploit the natural divisions within society, but lead people, despite their differences, to lead good, indeed, holy lives. Shabbat Shalom.
If you enjoyed this program, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. And discover JTS's other series by visiting jtsa.edu/podcasts. To learn with JTS faculty in live online classes, visit jtsa.edu/online. And you can get in touch with us by emailing onlinelearning@jtsa.edu. Thanks for listening.